Good morning. You're listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
Good morning. This is Jane Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next hour to answer all your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. And you can be our very first caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll-free at 1-800-WROW-590. Good morning, Jane Marie.
Good morning.
How are you doing this morning?
Oh, good. I almost was late. I narrowly avoided a traffic ticket.
Narrowly avoided?
You know how you're driving and the state trooper's in the divider,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly he pulls out?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. And then you panic and you drop down to the speed limit.
Yeah, exactly. One of those, huh?
One of those. He was going for someone else, luckily.
Luckily, he didn't want you. It's good not to be wanted.
That's right. So I did make it here. No time.
That's good. So we'd love for you to give us a call. And in the meantime, we just actually put seminars in January. We're doing basic estate planning and Medicaid planning. And those are going to be Tuesday, January 15th at 2 in the afternoon at Staybridge Suites on Wolf Road in Albany. That's the one that's right next to Colony Center. Like, you can see it from the Macy's parking lot.
Yes.
Not that I go to Macy's a lot. But anyway, Wednesday, January 16th, that's probably where I'm going after this. 2 in the afternoon at Glenn Sanders Mansion, Glen Avenue in Scotia. And then January 17th at 10 in the morning at the Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Ave in Albany. And January 17th at 2 in the afternoon at the Hampton Inn on Plank Road in Clifton Park. We also have one Thursday, January 31st. At 2 in the afternoon at the Courtyard by Marriott in Kingston on Frank Sotile Boulevard. So if you'd like to sign up for one of those, you can give the office a call at
518-465-7581.
I think I was going to give them the fax number. 518-465-7581. You can talk to them at reception and they'll put you on the list. And so
wonderful seminars to come and learn some basic information. This one's kind of about wills, powers of attorney, healthcare proxies, your basic estate planning. If you don't know what an estate plan is or you want to see if you should update yours, this is a good one to come to.
This one's is really good for questions.
Yes.
Because people come in and whenever we're doing the seminars, they'll be like, but what? What about?
Right. What if my healthcare proxy agent moves away? You know, can they still be my healthcare proxy?
Yes. What if my power of attorney, what powers do they have? Can they go in and take all of my money?
Yes, unfortunately, but
yeah, you know, that's the whole thing.
It's like good questions.
Whenever you have a power of attorney and you sign it and the person signs it, they're like, well, they can't use it until I become incapacitated, right? I'm like, no, they can go right now and use your power of attorney. So give us a call, 518-476-5900. Or toll-free 1-800-WROW-590. So any exciting cases this week?
Well, I had a happy case this week.
Oh, good.
This son who was trying to get guardianship of his dad did get the guardianship in time so that he can fly him home to be with his family next week.
Oh, that's really so nice.
Yeah, we got the order signed in time. It was kind of a crunch to get it done. So that was really sweet.
It's always nice to have the good ones as opposed to the not-so-good ones.
Yes, that's right.
And this time of year, we end up with a lot of people that haven't seen their family for a while. They go home, and then they figure out that mom and dad aren't quite doing as well as they thought they were going to do. And they might need some assistance in the house. They may need more care than they thought. Or, you know, mom or dad is the caregiver, and they're not doing so good.
Yeah, so this is kind of a good time to talk about those issues when you're home visiting your parents. You know, ask them if they've thought about this and put anything into place. Do they have a power of attorney or healthcare proxy? You know, that. So, and if they do you know where they are so you can get to them when you need them?
Yeah. People are like, well, what do we do with ours? Where is ours if we've done them with you? And they're like, they're in our vault.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, what if I need them? Well, then you can have them.
That's right. You can always call us and get them. But a lot of people put it in a safe deposit box, which can be very tricky because if you're the only name on that safe deposit box, then no one else can get in it. If you're in the hospital or sick or something, your child couldn't go there and get that out. So that's not the best place to put it.
Unless somebody's joint on it.
That's
right. That's the thing. You need to make sure that if you have a safety deposit box and you're going to add your kids, make sure you put them on as a joint owner. You don't put them on as a deputy. Because yes. deputy is just like a power of attorney. When the person dies, so do the rights of the deputy.
That's
so,
right.
Power of attorney is not any good after you're gone, and neither is your deputy. We have a client that we're working with out in Saratoga, and we've been working with the granddaughter, and it just amazes me. I call it water cooler talk. You know, everybody has an opinion as to what you can do. And so she says, can we file documents in the surrogate court that says that if anything happens to grandpa, that we're in charge of grandma? I'm like, no. Because he's still alive.
Right.
I'm like, no, we have to wait till she's dead. Well, I talked to the bank.
Oh, yes.
And the bank told me that I wouldn't be able to have access to money unless I have this letter from the court, you know, after he dies. So I'm thinking we should get the letter now. It's like, no, he's not dead yet.
Right. There's not. Yeah, you can't do that in advance.
Right? No, the surrogate court is not going to give you letters unless the person is deceased. And what those are called, if there's a will, they're called letters testamentary. And it basically says that you have access to the decedent's assets. So until they're dead, you can't have those.
Never heard of probating a will before the person's dead. That's interesting, right?
But I thought it was cool that, you know, the bank's like, no, you'll need these letters. And she's like, well, why waste time? Let's just go get them now.
Well, some people are very organized. They want to get everything done ahead of time. That's great.
And then she said, and what about grandma's will? And I'm like, well, grandma has dementia. Grandma can't do a new will. Oh, so we're stuck with that one, huh? Like, yeah. We're definitely stuck with that one. So
that does happen. We get that all the time with clients where we have to see if they can sign something new. And, you know, it depends. A lot of times they can't.
Yeah. Oh, no, there's no way she can. Take my word for it.
Yeah, you can.
No, she definitely cannot sign new documents. Very, very sweet person, but no, definitely can't sign documents. And that's one of those things. That's why you really need to plan ahead. And they did. They have documents that they did before, but they may not say what they want them to say now, or they may not have backup provisions.
And you mentioned grandchild. So when we talk to clients, we often say you should put in alternates. So maybe you name your son or your daughter as your power of attorney or your healthcare proxy. But it's great to name someone as a backup to that person. And you may want to go down to a grandchild to have a younger generation in place in case something happens to the first person you pick.
And I've got people that are coming in now that did their documents like 20 years ago. And it's the usual, right? Husband and wife name each other and then the kids. Well, now, you know, mom and dad are in their 80s or 90s. And they're like, we don't want to be number one anymore.
Yes.
We're failing in health. So we really want to have the kids as number one. So we kind of just move everybody up the food chain.
That's right. Everyone gets to step up in their order and their rank, right?
That's it. You know, so they move up. So that's something to think about, too. And that's why you always need backups. You need backup trustees. You need backup executors, backup powers of attorney. Because if something happens to you and you can't take care of things, you definitely want somebody to be there.
Right. And if it's not a family member, you could think of a friend or a neighbor or accountant, financial advisor, someone like that.
Exactly.
Right. Because some clients say, I can't think of a backup. Well, it's better to think of one now, because if you don't have a backup and then we have to go to court, they're going to select a guardian for you.
Right. And people are like, well, if something happens to that person, I'll just change it then. Well, what if you're incapacitated?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Oh, that I can't change it? No, you can't.
No, you got to do it now. You got to think ahead a little bit.
So give us a call, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Or toll free, 1-800-WROW-590. That's 1-800-WROW-590. It's funny, J. Marie and Ben are both like shaking their head as I do the phone number because I left part of it off one time when I did it. And then the other time I forgot to do it at all.
We're thrilled with your progress. Yes. We really are. We're a little concerned because you weren't able to give out your own phone number for the office, but that's all right. That's all right. We're moving forward. That's all we're doing.
Moving on.
Merry Christmas.
We can't hit everything.
Merry Christmas. A little bit too much eggnog. No, not yet. Anyway, so again, we have seminars in January. January's like
right around the corner, right?
Week after next.
Well, we just did our December seminars, and they were on aging in place.
Mm-hmm.
And they were great. They were very well attended. We got really good questions at those seminars. People, I think, learned a lot about care at home and community Medicaid.
And it's not that easy. You know, it's not a do-it-yourself.
That's right. It's an application that you really need some advice on, because it's not just filling out the paperwork. It's you have to know the implications of what you put down there and your assets, and you need to know what happens after that and how you get evaluated for home care. So you need someone to explain the whole process to you. And we have, not just us, we have Kim Hance, who is our geriatric care manager, who can help you out with the next step of the process, which is an evaluation.
Right. And she won't be doing that for a bit. She's away.
Yes, she has a nice Christmas break.
She does. She's in Italy. So we'll have her all booked up when she gets back, though. But
that's right.
Community Medicaid, for those of you that haven't heard us harp on it before, is care at home. So if you have someone that will qualify to stay home instead of going into a nursing home, because no one wants to go into a nursing home. So there's no look back period for community Medicaid. You know, where everybody's like 5 years, 5 years, 5 years for custodial Medicaid in the nursing home. There's no look back for community Medicaid.
That's right. So it's great for last minute planning. You know, maybe you haven't had a chance to get your trust funded, but you can still do this and then get community Medicaid. You could set up a trust. You could put your assets into it to reduce your assets down to the Medicaid level. And then you could be immediately eligible to get care at home.
Or daycare. I have one client that he was so sweet. Every morning he'd get up, drive his wife to daycare, run a couple of errands, go pick her up from daycare and go home. So he really didn't have any time to himself. So we got her on community Medicaid, and now they pick her up. That's they great. Take her to daycare, and they take her back home. So he has time to run errands and get things together and maybe get a little bit of respite time for himself.
And yeah, that can really help her stay home a lot longer if he's getting some rest and he has some more energy to keep taking care of her.
I know. That's what's so hard is what do you do when the caregiver becomes ill? And community Medicaid pays for care to come in the house. So if you've got a single caregiver that's taking care, a husband or a wife, and then maybe you've got people coming in maybe a few hours a day, community Medicaid may be able to give you more hours and give that person a little bit of a break.
Right, and those daycare programs are great because sometimes getting out of the house, getting that socialization, seeing other people can really help the person with dementia. Right,
right. And Kim, it was interesting when Kim was talking to the presentation that we had up in Saratoga, they were asking her questions, and she said that depending on, there's different types of daycare programs. There's socialization programs, and then there's programs that where they clean them up. You know, you take them in and they give them a shower and they take care of everything like that because they have the facilities to do it. So if you have someone that you can't take care of at home as far as showering and stuff like that, there's programs where you take them in and they take care of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's wonderful. You know, because sometimes you can't get that help at home, so you can get that done while you're at the daycare.
Definitely.
Right.
We have a caller. We have Tom from Albany. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I have a kind of like a three-part question. My girlfriend inherited a home, an income property from her parents about 3 years ago. She's never had the deed changed to her name. She is paying the monthly mortgage. Her name is different than her last name is different from her parents. The bank is accepting the check. And if she does change the deed to her name, will the bank call back the mortgage? It's like the three-part question I have.
Well, yes. So that's a good question. At some point, she has to have the deed transferred into her name, which would probably require probate, I'm assuming, if it wasn't in a trust. So she would have to either do a probate if her dad had a will, or she'd have to do what we call an administration proceeding through the surrogate's court to get appointed to be able to transfer the deed into her name. But you are right, the mortgage company won't continue. She would have to apply for a new mortgage with a deed in her name.
Okay. Why is it, it's a local bank, I won't name it, but why is it accepting the mortgage payment every month when her name is different than her parents?
Because they don't want to own the house. I mean, they could call the mortgage anytime. When the person passes away, they could call the mortgage at any time. They're kind of just like giving her some time to do whatever she's got to do. And sooner or later, they'll probably pull the mortgage. So she should really look into getting the deed into her name and getting her own mortgage, because they could do it at any time. And better to plan ahead and get it done than to have them come up and say all of a sudden, well, guess what? We're calling the mortgage. Figure out what you're going to do.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, all right. That's what then she should do. She's procrastinating on this a long time, but I will relay this message to her. Thank you very
much. No problem. If there's anything we can do to help, give us a call at the office.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Take care. And we have David from Del Mar. Okay. Morning, David.
Good morning. I have a question regarding Medicare. Does Medicare pay anything for hospice?
Yes, Medicare does pay for hospice care. You know, there's certain medical eligibility requirements to be able to get hospice care, but once you do, Medicare will pay for that. Generally, in the hospital, there's a hospice facility behind in the nursing home behind St. Peter's.
Mm-hmm.
They have a great hospice facility there, and that is paid for by Medicare.
I'm getting some mixed information. I went on the Medicare website. They said, well, they don't pay for room and board, but they'll pay for other things. Or then the insurance company said that the original Medicare pays for it. So I'm getting some mixed messages, I guess.
Well, in the hospital, they'll pay for room and board. But if you're in a nursing home, Medicare will not pay for room and board.
This is at a hospice. Not a hospital or nursing home.
Well, if it's a designated hospice, that's why I mentioned that facility. You know, if you're on the hospice floor, they'll pay for everything. But if you're on a regular nursing home floor, they won't pay for your room and board.
Okay,
so it gets a little tricky where you have to talk to the doctors and see if you qualify for hospice. And there's certain things you have to meet to be eligible for that.
Okay, because in this case, my mother's in the hospice now. Mm-hmm. And the... She was, I guess the, I'm still not clear on it, because the hospice, I mean, is accredited hospice.
Mm-hmm.
and they said that, I guess room and board, I guess, which is about $300 a day,
mm-hmm.
they Medicare would not pay for it. They would pay for medications, but that would be it. A doctor did designate my mother as being, probably living less than 6 months.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it's something that probably would qualify, and maybe it's something that you need to do an appeal. So if you wanted to call our office and talk more about that, we could talk through that and see maybe you need to do a Medicare appeal.
Okay.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Great question.
Yeah, very good question. Because it's expensive, and you want to see that you can get into a program that does pay for that end-of-life care.
Yeah, definitely. And you could be our next caller. We had like a little flurry of calls there.
I know, that's right.
The phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590.
Yeah, get your calls in before you go out and do your last-minute Christmas shopping.
Mm-hmm.
I guess this weekend counts as last-minute shopping, right?
This weekend counts, yes. Definitely this counts as last-minute shopping.
Well, real last minute would be Monday, but I hope no one's shopping on Monday.
I always shop on Christmas Eve.
Oh, okay.
Even if I don't need anything.
You just like to go out.
I just like to go out,
mm-hmm.
and just like walk around. I'm usually always, knock on wood, in Missouri.
Okay.
So I always like make my, trip to the big mall,
mm-hmm.
in Springfield and go like walk around and see what's what.
Well, sometimes you can get some last minute deals, perhaps, right?
Like, yeah. We used to go out the day after Christmas. My mother and I used to go out the day after Christmas, and one of us would stand in line at whatever the store was. Then the other one would shop, and then we'd trade places.
I like to go shopping after Christmas, too. That's when you get the big discounts.
Yes, but you've got to be patient. It's almost like the Black Friday kind of thing. You've got to be very, very patient to get deals the day after Christmas.
Right, wait for those long lines.
Definitely. So give us a call, 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. Or 1-800-WROW-590. And an estate plan would be a great gift.
Yes, because it's something that you probably think that you do need, but it's not at the top of your priority list. So what if someone paid for you to have an estate plan done? Maybe a parent can pay for their child to get a will, a healthcare proxy, a power of attorney. it's, you know, then you're going to do it, right? Someone else paid for it. Maybe they'll move up to the top of your list.
There you go. No, I've had clients that have purchased, like, a gift certificate from us for their children for an estate plan because they're like, if we don't do it, they're never going to do it.
I had a client, he had a revocable trust, and he paid for his three children each to get revocable trust done.
That makes sense.
A really great present, really nice. And they each did it. They were kind of young at the time. I mean, young, like in their 20s.
Mm-hmm.
But it was kind of giving them a head start in, on getting this estate planning done. So,
well, if you own a house, I mean, yeah, it totally makes sense, especially if the kids were single.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you going to do with the house? We had the situation, one of the gentlemen that I deal with, he told me that he sent some people over to me, and I'm like, really? And he goes, yeah. He goes, I met with him. He's an insurance person. He goes, met with him and said, well, do you have any life insurance? And they're like, no. And so it was a man and a woman with two kids, right? They've been together for like 10 years.
Not married.
Not married, right? So they're not married. They've got two kids together. They're both their kids.
Right.
And they've just never gotten married. His name's on the house, not hers, right? And so he was like, do you have any idea what would happen if you passed away? And he's like, well, no, she gets everything, right?
How? If they're not married, how would she get everything?
Right, and they don't have any estate planning documents. So he's like, no, she'd get everything. It's like, no, that's not how it works.
Right, if you're not married, which a lot of couples aren't for various reasons, it's even more important to get your estate planning done. You know, to get that will done, to get the power of attorney done. Like, well, if you're in the hospital, you're... significant other really has no say over you.
No, none whatsoever. And that's what a lot of people don't realize. Well, we're together. We've been together for 10 years. It doesn't matter. You're not married.
That's right.
You need either the piece of paper that says you're married.
That's
right. Or you need the piece of paper that you're the healthcare proxy, the power of attorney, and you need to do a will.
That's right.
It looks like we have a caller, and then we'll go into that after. We have
Larry in Mariahville.
Larry in Mariahville. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, ladies and Ben, and Merry Christmas to you before, so I don't forget.
Oh, Merry Christmas.
A couple of weeks ago, when you ladies were on, I believe, maybe it was Jean Marie, was talking about potential pitfalls for 529s. Mm. And I was wondering if you might go over those.
Yeah, I think the pitfall I probably was talking about is that if you have a 529 plan for your grandchild and then you apply for Medicaid, that counts as your asset because that's your money, even though you put it in that account to pay for your grandchild's college education. You could take that money back out at any time. So that's something that people, they think, oh, it's the grandchild's money and that it wouldn't count. And that could really hurt you when you apply for Medicaid.
Okay, well, probably wouldn't be eligible for Medicaid anyway, so...
Well, if you're trying to get eligible for Medicaid, you know, this is one asset that you really have to deal with.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, interesting when you heard that. I didn't quite catch it because something else was going on at the same time. And my son and daughter-in-law and grandchild will be here this coming week. And we thought that was one thing we're going to talk about is opening them one up for her. She's only a little over a year and a half.
Oh, that's so cute.
That's nice. that's nice.
Right, okay.
So the way around that for Medicaid is, if you're willing to do this, is to give the money to your son or daughter and have them open up the 529 plan. So now it's not in your name anymore. Yeah, that counts as a gift and a transfer for Medicaid, so it would have to be outside of that five-year window, the look-back.
Mm-hmm.
But it does get it out of your name, and now your son or daughter is now in charge of that money for your grandchild.
That's good to, since my wife and I are both a little on the older side, that might not be a bad way to go.
Right, that's probably a good way to go, so it doesn't count as your asset anymore.
Another question, Jean Marie, are you going to be in the office next week?
Yes, I am.
Okay, because you were going to, I know Harry had you do something for me, look into, I got to give you a buzz and find out what happened on that.
Okay, yeah, sure. Give me a call. I'm there next week.
Okay, very good.
Okay, good.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling.
Right, bye now.
Bye-bye. Yeah, the 529 plan, if he does get it in his own name, he needs to make sure there's an alternate owner on it. Because
that's another thing, too.
If you're the only owner on it and then you pass away, then we have to do probate to get the 529 plan moved to somebody else's name.
Right. When I opened our 529 plan, I did it in my name because I do all the finances in my house.
Of course you do.
Of course. Then I realized, if I die, how's my husband going to get this? Right? So I had to add him on as an owner.
Alternate owner
after me.
Yep, there you go. So it makes sense. You got to plan ahead.
That's right.
And we're coming up on the half hour. So whenever we get back from the break, you can give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. And we were talking about unmarried couples.
Oh, yes, and how important it is to get your documents done, right? Because you're not automatic. They don't automatically have access to information on the bank accounts or their medical information, so you do need those papers to give you the legal access to that information.
Well, I mean, the thing is, I mean, think about it. Let's just say you had been, like these people, they've been together for like 10 years. They got two kids. Mm-hmm. Let's just say that his mother does not like her, mm-hmm. does not like the significant other. And then the son ends up going into the hospital.
Right.
The mother could keep her from seeing him.
Yeah, because the mother is the next of kin. They would have the access and the rights under, to get medical information.
Exactly. So she would be the next of kin. And then let's look at, well, what would happen if he passed away? So they would look to see, is he married? No. Does he have kids? Yes. So now, without a will or anything like that, the money's going to end up going to the kids. The kids are obviously underage. Right, so all the money's going to the money in the house are going to go to the kids,
right? And then it doesn't go to his significant other, and that all that money has to be spent for the children, right?
Exactly.
And so she can't use that money to pay for living expenses, and so that's kind of a little hot mess that they've gotten into.
Definitely. And what if he just became incapacitated, or he was in a car accident and he got stuck in the hospital? And there's no power of attorney. And let's just say they each had their own account and then they had a joint account that they paid bills out of, right?
Mm-hmm.
She has access to that joint account, but she doesn't have access to his individual account to get the money out.
And she wouldn't have, if he becomes incapacitated, she couldn't deal with his work to get, his salary transferred or turned into disability income. She couldn't do any of that stuff.
No. So it's really important, especially if... you've been together forever and you think, oh, everything's fine, everything's mm-hmm. great. It's not. You've really got to think about these things, because a lot of times the house is in one way, one name or another. It's not in joint for one reason or another. And we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half. I'm Debbie Verney.
And I'm Jane Marie Schaefer.
And we're two of the attorneys at the Herzog Law Firm. We're going to be here for the next half hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning, all those kind of fun legal things. Phone number here, 518-476-5900, 518-476-5900, or toll free, 1-800-WROW-590. A lot of great calls the first half hour.
Yes, lots of good questions, right? Very good calls. People are listening before they go Christmas shopping, so that's good.
Or they're listening while they're Christmas shopping.
That's true.
Like the husband sitting out in the car waiting for the wife listening to the radio, or vice versa.
Right, to be fair, but come on, it's usually the husband. So
yeah, true, true. We were talking about that the other day, and I was saying how when I worked retail, we'd have to work Christmas Eve, obviously.
Right.
And Christmas Eve is when you'd see all the men come in to go do their shopping.
Oh, yes. They're doing it last minute.
They're doing last minute. Not that all men are that way, but...
I was thinking more like when we used to go to department stores, which no one does anymore. All the men are in the TV section.
Yeah.
Right? Sitting there watching TV while their wives are shopping.
That's true. That's true. I know that usually they all have a chair like right outside the fitting room or something like that, right. Or near the front of the store for the men so that they can hang out while the women shop.
That's right. But now Amazon has changed all that. So
yes, it has. And we have a call. We have Desiree from Latham. Good morning.
Good morning. My question is more on the lines of, I purchased a home from my parents, but I did it legally through lawyers and all that, so I got the note, the deed, all that stuff. But I want to know how to get it on my credit report so it can show that I'm making payments and it's good for my credit.
So did they file the mortgage with the county clerk?
Yes.
I'm trying to think. So it's filed there, so it's on record, but I don't know that a credit report would automatically pick that up.
It wouldn't, because there's no bank.
Right. And they're not going to the point of searching the county clerk's office. So, you know, credit reports are looking at the banks and financial institutions to see what's going on.
Right.
So I don't think that's going to show up on your credit report.
You know, you might want to contact one of the credit reporting agencies and see if there's something that your parents can file to show that you're paying the payments or something like that. I they would have the answer to that. We wouldn't, but that's a great thing. It's like, how are they going to show that you're making these payments and getting a good credit report if, you know, you're not?
Right.
I would contact one of the credit reporting agencies and see, you know, if there's anything they can do to add it. I'm sure that your parents would have to be the ones that filed it, and they'd have to have the records from the county clerk's office to show that the mortgage was filed on the property.
Okay.
Well, good
Thank
luck.
Thank you so much.
All right.
That's a very interesting question.
That is an interesting question, because she's being responsible and making her payments on time, but a credit agency may not recognize that. So,
I know. That's interesting. I've got one of those credit reporting things now, so anytime I do anything, they send me an email and went, go, hello, something happened today.
Right.
And I'm like, did I do something today?
Those are good to prevent fraud from happening.
So. They are, and there's been a lot of fraud out there. Yeah. Definitely a lot of fraud.
Yeah, lots of schemes that are out there to trick you into doing things.
My neighbor got a call from her supplemental insurance provider the other day. Or I got to her house and she's like, I got a call from my provider today. I'm like, yeah. And she goes, and they were asking really personal questions. And I went, okay. And she goes, so I just told them that I was uncomfortable answering their questions and I hung up on them. She goes, so I called my agent and told him that they had called me. And apparently he called the company and they had not called anyone.
Very good. So she's really smart and on top of things. You shouldn't give out that personal information over the phone. I've heard some people say, just put it in writing and mail it to me.
Exactly.
And that kind of cuts out the fraud there.
Right? And that's the thing, too. They call and they're so, you know, this is your credit card company and blah, blah, blah. So why don't you confirm with me what your Social Security number is so that we can make sure we're talking to the right person. And you're like, you're the one that called me.
There you go.
You give me my Social Security number. You tell me who you are.
Right. Don't give out any information. I've had tons of those calls from the IRS. I think they finally stopped calling me. Not the real IRS, of course.
Not the real IRS. The fake IRS.
And they are very threatening that I'm going to go to jail, my bank account's going to be seized if I don't call them right away, and I would, you know, just ignore them.
And they're sitting across the street waiting to arrest you when you come outside.
Right, right. So those calls you definitely have to ignore. You know, if it's true, you would probably get something in writing in the mail, but don't give out that information over the phone.
No, definitely. Don't ever give any personal information out over the phone, because you just never know. It could be going into all kinds of different people's hands. And we have David from Kingston. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
What can we help you with?
Well, I'd like to revisit a topic that you discussed a couple of weeks ago. And the topic concerned IRAs, RMDs, and the effect on Medicare premiums.
Jean Marie and I are both looking at each other going, you had us, we were going along, and then you were talking about
RMDs, yeah, we got that. And then Medicare premiums. I think maybe you're referring to the fact that Medicare premiums are affected by how high your income is.
Yes.
Correct.
Right, and
yes,
when your income is over.
I believe that was the subject that the individual brought up.
Sure. And your RMDs are income, so they would count as income towards that amount that you're allowed to have before your premiums go up. And then there's really nothing you can do about your RMDs. You're required to take them once you reach age 70 and a half. There's an IRS table that calculates how much you need to receive each year. So that does count as your income for that purpose.
Okay. How are withdrawals from a Roth IRA, how do they affect, if they affect, the Medicare premiums?
I don't know the answer to that. I would think that those are income just like
your income,
regular IRA.
They're just not taxed.
It's just not taxable income. So okay. I would think that's income unless they're going to distinguish between taxable and non-taxable income.
I wouldn't think that they did.
Right.
Because, no, on your tax return, there's taxable and non-taxable income.
Right.
So the Roth would go under the non-taxable income, but it's still going to be taxable.
Still.
Not taxable. It's still going to be counted for Medicare.
Right. It's still listed on there as income. Right.
Okay, so it sounds like an RMD from a traditional IRA and withdrawals from Roth IRAs will affect the income basis for Medicare premiums.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, well, thank you very much for taking my call.
You're welcome.
And have a Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
You too.
Bye now.
That's kind of depressing, you know? Mm-hmm. It's like you work all this time and then you get a nice return from your investments and
now
jack up your Medicare premium.
That's right. That's right. Oh, yes, that's unfortunate. I thought he was going to ask us the question about how does that work for Medicaid purposes.
Right, I thought so too.
Right, which for Medicaid purposes, the good news is that the balance in your IRA account is exempt, doesn't count. However, the RMDs that you take are counted as income.
Right.
So, for example, if you're in a nursing home, that all your income goes to the nursing home. So that would include the RMD that you are taking from the IRA. But the balance that's in that account is exempt, and that does go to your beneficiaries when you do pass away.
Just make sure you have updated beneficiaries.
Yes.
Yes, definitely. That's another thing, too. We were talking about earlier of having backups on documents. You need to have backup beneficiaries, too. So husband and wife name each other if you want the kids to get it after. Then you need to name the kids because, again, what if something happens to your spouse? You're incapacitated. You can't change the beneficiaries. Mm-hmm. Now your power of attorney would be able to change the beneficiaries.
True. Believe it or not, some people have their beneficiary as their spouse because they have it from so long ago.
Right.
And they never added their children.
Right.
So you have to, when you review all your documents, when you're looking at everything, this is one of the things you need to do is update beneficiaries.
I've had people come in that their parents were still their beneficiaries because they had the really, really old
before
life
they
insurance.
Were married.
Yeah, and the parents are gone.
Right.
So that's not good. I've had people that have ex-spouses as beneficiary. Definitely not a good thing to have.
Right.
And if you want to be our next caller at 518-476-5900. 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590. Those are all things you got to think about. And if you don't, I mean, they don't just magically change because things happen in your life. You got to really think about, you know, where are your accounts? Where's your life insurance?
Mm-hmm. Think about when's a good time to review all this stuff. Kind of end of the year is one time to look at this stuff.
New Year's resolution.
Right, when you're putting things together for your tax return. Sometime where you're kind of pulling out all your paperwork, that's the time to say, oh, let me check my IRA beneficiaries. Let me check my life insurance beneficiaries. And you may have to make a phone call to the company to see who it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have a situation. Actually, you had a situation, too, where people did their wills years and years ago, back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had what was called a bypass disclaimer will.
Right.
So it's a will that we used to use a lot whenever the tax rates for estate tax were, the rates were still high, but you had to have, you know, they were like...
The amount was a lot lower.
It was like about $1 million and something. So I had a situation where the broker contacted my people. Mom and dad are both dead now. They died within 6 months of each other. Mm-hmm. And he made the backup beneficiary, the trust established under his will dated 1999. Okay, the trust was never established. She died first.
Right.
Okay, and he had redone his will.
Mm-hmm.
But he had gone to the broker and he had named this trust as the beneficiary and the trust doesn't exist.
Right.
So they're saying...
So they're making you transfer it to a trust first that doesn't even exist before it can go out.
And they were like, why don't you just have it paid to his estate? Because if the trust didn't exist, it's kind of like... Mm-hmm. The trust predeceased him because it never exists, right? So why don't you just make it payable to his estate and then have his estate pay it out to the kids? Well, then you got that layer of tax right there.
Right.
So even if they do that, which we're not sure that they're going to do, right? So it's going to be payable to the estate. The estate's going to have to pay the tax on it and then have it go out to the kids. Whereas if the kids were like a backup beneficiary, it could have been payable to them, and then they could have stretched it over their life expectancy.
Right, that's a whole extra step that's really unnecessary. So a lot of people, so that's a good reason to review your older wills, because a lot of your older wills have a marital trust and either a family trust or a bypass trust. There's lots of different names for it if you're looking at your will that aren't really necessary anymore. So if you have one of those wills that sets up different trusts, you should bring them in, let us look at them, and maybe we could even get rid of those trusts and have it just go to your spouse and then your children.
Right, and when we do that, we will go over your beneficiary designations too, because this is something that I'm sure that whenever we met with them when they redid their wills, which they did, I mean, like I said, this was an old will that had been revoked by a new will, because a new will, the first line in your new will is, I hereby revoke all prior wills documents. So this 1999 will doesn't even really exist anymore.
So they had even updated their will, but they just hadn't done the next step of
updating the beneficiary designations.
Right.
So whenever people come in and they update their documents, we're always like, okay, did you update your beneficiary designations? Who's the beneficiary in your life insurance? Who's the beneficiary in your retirement accounts? And usually people have that deer in the headlights look.
Yeah, I don't know. If I've done that, I don't know who my beneficiary is.
I know. It's not good. Definitely not good. I don't know who to contact.
Right.
You know, my broker went out of business 10 years ago. Who am I going to call? It's like, whose phone number's on your statement? Don't you get a statement?
Right, or if it's something you have through your job, you need to call HR at your job to find out beneficiaries on your life insurance, right?
Okay, again, phone number here is 518-476-5900, 518-476-5900, or 1-800-WROW-590.
And just to remind you, we have seminars coming up in January. We'll be talking about basic estate planning. So the first seminar is Tuesday, January 15th at 2 o'clock at the Staybridge Suites. That's the one in Macy's and Colony Center.
The men's department. Like, if you're just looking at the men's department, if you turn around and look, you'll see it right there.
And the next one is Wednesday, January 16th at 2 o'clock at Glenn Sanders Mansion. And on Thursday, January 17th, we have two. We have one at 10 o'clock at the Courtyard by Marriott on Washington Avenue in Albany. And at 2 in the afternoon at the Hampton Inn in Clifton Park. And to sign up for these, you can call the office at 465-7581. Or you can email us at info@herzoglaw.com to sign up for one of these seminars.
Or you can sign up online, I think.
Yeah, you can just click a button and sign up online.
Which is easy, yeah.
That's right.
So we'd love to see you guys. A lot of times... In these seminars, there's lots and lots of questions. And that's the thing, too. These are very low-key. People come in. They have cookies and, well, sometimes they have brownies. Like at Glenn Sanders has nice brownies. I always talk about that.
I love to talk about the cookies, yeah.
But it'll be after the first year, so everyone will be on diets.
Right. So that's not so good. Maybe we should put out vegetable platters.
I don't know. Yeah. Well,
would people still come if we had vegetable platters?
I don't know. Probably not. And the office would be upset if, like, we brought back vegetables and fruit to the office instead of leftover cookies. But it's very low-key. People can come in, sit down, listen to the presentation, ask questions. I always tell people if they have something really, really personal that they can come up and talk to me afterwards.
Right, and we all stay around afterwards to answer questions. So you didn't want to ask in front of the whole group. That's fine.
But it's funny because a lot of the questions that people ask in front of the group, it'll be like, you give them an answer and they're like, but somebody else raises their hand, well, what about this? Right. You know, like a little bit of a twist on the previous question or, you know, it triggers something in somebody else. And it's great because a lot of people have the exact same questions.
Yes.
They just don't know what to ask.
Right. And once someone asks, then it gets them thinking. It promotes a good discussion.
It does, definitely. So those, again, those are open to the public and you're more than welcome to come if you'd like. And it looks like we have a caller. We have Thomas from East Greenbush. Good morning, Thomas.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Okay. We have our house in an irrevocable trust. Been in there for a number of years. And we have two children and five grandchildren. So we took $50,000 and put it in a CD with the same name, the irrevocable trust. Let's say it's Jim and Mary Smith, irrevocable trust, William Smith trustee.
Right.
And we just designated it for the grandchildren, just in our notes.
Is it in your notes or is it in the trust document, written into the trust document?
It's just in a CD.
Okay, no, I know, but the fact that you want to leave it to your grandchildren, is that just something you wrote down for
it's
your
not
children?
In the will. It's just written down and stuck into the CD envelope.
So is the CD is owned by the trust?
Yes.
Okay, so who is the beneficiary of the trust?
Jim.
I'm sorry?
I say we believe so. It has the federal ID number on it.
Yes. Okay. So that should mean it's owned by the trust, right?
So who's the beneficiary of the trust?
Would be my wife and I.
No. When you and your wife are both gone, where does the money go?
Okay. The trustee is one of my sons.
Okay. And who are the beneficiaries?
Does it go to your two children after
you're
both?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So if that CD is in the trust, right, and you and your wife pass away, and it says it goes to your two kids, that CD would end up going to your two kids. It wouldn't go to the grandkids.
Right, but I would trust that my son would do what we wished. They're going to have their own money. But what my question is does this $50,000 that's in the irrevocable trust meet the five-year look-back should something happen to one of us? Or is it because it's in a trust, it would not be looked at all?
It depends on the date that you change the owner to the trust. So they're going to look back 5 years and to see when that CD was placed into the trust. So if it was placed into the trust more than 5 years ago, then you're okay. If it's within the past 5 years, then it is going to count as a transfer for Medicaid purposes.
Yeah, okay. So after 5 years, it is safe.
Yep, you got to keep healthy for 5 years after you put it in.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay. Now, I report the interest from this CD on my tax return, and then I file a fiduciary return.
Right. You're doing good.
Yes.
Good job. We're impressed. Most of our people, they always call us every year. We always send out the tax packet for our clients for the 1041 for the trust, mm-hmm. and then, you know, you do your 1040. So we're impressed that you could talk about a fiduciary return.
So
good job.
If we add more money to that, not designated to them, but just add more money to this particular trust just to keep it safe. That will run the 5 years, and then it will be safe.
Yes, they'll each individually have their own 5 years. It doesn't affect anything that's already in there. So if you did the trust in 2010, then in 2015, that house was protected. And then if you put money in 2015, then 2020 is when that would be protected. So it doesn't affect the original deposit, but each individual thing needs its own 5 years.
Okay. But I don't need to go and see my attorney every time I want to put money into the trust account.
No.
Mm-mm. No.
Okay, super.
Okay, great.
Well, have a great weekend.
I thank you very much. You too.
Take care.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.
We have a caller on the line right now, Danette in Albany. She's gone.
She's gone.
All right.
So we don't have her on the line.
Back to you guys. Okay. So we have about 5 minutes left. Mm-hmm. And so the phone number here is 518-476-5900 or toll free 1-800-WROW-590. We may be able to squeak you in. It looks like Ben
is very busy over here.
Ben is very busy.
That's right.
And so he's talking on the phone as we speak. But again, we're going to have seminars Tuesday, January 15th at 2 in the afternoon. Staybridge Spreets.
Oh, that's a new one.
That's a new one. Sweets. On Wolf Road in Albany, mm-hmm. January 16th at Glenn Sanders. And now we have a caller. We have Felix from Freehold.
Right.
Good morning,
right.
Felix.
Good morning. Early in the very beginning of the show, you talked about safe deposit boxes.
Right.
And we were thinking about putting our children on. You were saying they have to be on as a...
Joint owner.
Now, mm-hmm. I called a bank. They only issued two keys. Is there any way you can get additional keys?
Generally not. Generally, there's only two keys for the safety deposit box, but just because your kid's a joint owner doesn't mean they need to have a key. You could always just have the key someplace in the house and they could know where it is.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, because I think it's a really good idea. We are on the box jointly, me and my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So so they could be actually additional owners?
They could be, yes.
Okay, good. That's my question.
Just tell them where the key is so they know where it is.
That's right.
Okay. No big secrets on this one. Huh?
Well, that's, you've got to be able to find it. That's the thing. Yeah. My mom's like, well, I have a safety deposit box. And I'm like, well, where's the key? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
It's like, all it doesn't do me any good if I'm joint on it if I don't know where the key is.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the answer to the question.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
That happened to me recently. My son got his driver's license, so I had to go get his birth certificate out of the deposit box, and I couldn't remember where the key was. It took me a good 15, 20 minutes searching around the house to find it.
That's it. And, if you have someone that passes away and they don't have an additional owner on the box, and then we have to drill the box, that's an additional expense for the estate.
Right.
You have to have the attorney there, the bank officer there, and the little guy to drill the box.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like not fun. Everybody's standing around waiting for the box to be drilled.
Yeah.
I had one of those where the person passed away and we're standing there and they finally opened the box and everything's wrapped in aluminum foil.
Oh, that's bizarre.
I think she thought maybe if there was a fire
that
the foil would protect it. Or like if they were using like laser scanners that they couldn't see what was in there if it had the foil on it. It's always interesting that, the stuff that's in a safety deposit box.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting what people keep in there.
It is. It's.
And then you have the people who don't use a safe deposit box. A lot of I hear stories of people have cash in the house. Hidden around the house. And if you think your parent or your grandparent is doing that, don't throw anything out,
Yep.
Furniture, look under the cushions, books, sometimes it could be stashed anywhere if you have someone who tends to do that.
I had a client who the dad passed away and the son came in and decided he was going to rent out the house. We got everything all done with the estate. And so he went in, he got everything all cleaned, and then he was Swiffering the floor. It was a wooden floor, Swiffering the floor in the living room, and he hit the rubber coping on the bottom of the floor. And all of a sudden he's like, well, what's that? Savings bonds. All the way around the room behind the rubber coping.
Oh, my goodness.
They had hidden the savings bonds behind the rubber coping.
I haven't heard that one. I guess that's a good place to put it. Yeah.
Yeah. So he's like, needless to say, he's like, I don't think I'll rent the house for a while. I think I need to, check everything else to make sure that there's nothing else hidden anywhere.
Right. I had a client. She had tons of savings bonds, but they were down in the furnace room. That's not really a good place to keep it, right?
No, definitely not a good place.
They could have gone up in fire. That'd be the first place they'd go. And they weren't even in a special metal box. So no. When her grandchildren found that, we immediately got them out, put them in an investment account.
Or when you get the stuff that comes in that people have kept it in their basement, it's a little bit moldy.
Yeah, that's right.
That's not a good place to keep them either.
No, not a good place. And then some people put them in a freezer.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
I think they were told that would also avoid a fire. So
it would avoid a fire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did have an employee that was in when the hurricanes hit that was, in the middle of that and all the stuff got destroyed. And they told her the safest place to keep things during a flood like that is the dishwasher because it's watertight.
Oh, dishwasher.
Right. So if you had valuables, to leave them in the dishwasher because even if it floods, right, it's watertight.
Oh, it's going to be fine.
It's going to be fine.
You just hope it doesn't float away somewhere else.
That's exactly. True. Well, so, if it's built in, maybe it'll stay there. I don't know.
But that's an interesting idea.
That's interesting. So you're preparing for the hurricane. You go grab your cash and your jewelry.
You throw it. Yeah, I'm going to throw mine in the dishwasher and run. It'll be fine.
That's right. Interesting.
But, it's interesting because if you think about it, it's watertight. So if there's something.
That makes sense. Right?
That you want to, that you can't get out of the house.
Right.
I don't know.
Throw the cat in there? Sorry. Just...
No. The cat probably couldn't breathe because it's watertight.
I got it. Okay.
That would be a bad thing, Jamarie.
Okay.
Yeah. All these great thoughts during the holiday season, right?
Save the cats, Save the dog. That's right. Don't put them in the dishwasher.
No, the dishwasher's not a good place. But no, people used to hide things in their freezer because they thought, thieves are never going to look in the freezer.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Except now that we talked about it.
We've talked about it, we do. Yeah, people put cash in there. They would also just put their important documents in there.
Right.
Their healthcare proxy and stuff. Sometimes I've seen people leave their healthcare proxy and power of attorney on the refrigerator. So
right.
If someone comes in and an emergency, they can see that right away and they know.
Yeah, definitely tell your family where your documents are. And again, if we did your documents, then the originals are in our vault. But you more than happy to give you guys copies.
Yes, that's happened to us several times. Someone's in the hospital, and then we have to fax over a copy. So you can always call us to get that.
Definitely. And what you need to realize, too, though, is we represent whoever our client is. We don't represent the kids, excuse me, or anybody else. We represent the client. So if they call up and say, Mom and Dad, we're in a horrible accident. They're at Albany Med. We're not just going to fax it over. We're going to call and confirm that they're actually at Albany Med before we fax over the documents.
Right. That's true. It's not just for you to look, you know.
No. We're not going to say stop by the office and just pick them up. They'll be at the front desk. No problem.
I'm just curious what's in Mom and Dad's will.
We get those calls, by the way.
Right. It's true. That's why we have these rules, right?
That's why we have these rules. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, they have a will, but you're not in it. That makes for a nice holiday conversation, right?
With about a minute left, we have Frank from Colony. Okay.
Good morning, Frank.
Good morning, Debbie. I just called to wish you, Harry, and the Herzog Law Firm a very Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year. And I'm doing well. I'm alive.
Well, that's
and,
good.
I intend on being this way for quite some time.
Well, we hope so, Frank, because I use you as my topic of conversation generally. I use you as my example. More amendments to their trust than the Constitution.
Well, I'm thinking up another one.
I know you are. You always are, Frank. So you have a great holiday season. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you, too.
All right.
And I'll look forward to your next amendment next year.
Okay, bye.
Take care, Frank.
That's very nice.
He's funny. He really does. We're working on, you know, all of his amendments. He's working on the beating up the Constitution. So, we're going to be signing off here in a few minutes. So, again, Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy New Year. And we'll see you next year.
For listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.